you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Holy shit, we are back. An epic UFC 249 is in the books. We get to reminisce now. It was amazing. It was honestly, it was a history-making event with everything that's going on. It was a really incredible Saturday night. Even if the fights weren't that good, it would have been incredible. The mood was in the air. There was something amazing. But Mr. Bisping, I know you had a great time. You look great right now. You're about to travel literally in a couple hours. You're about to go to the next event.
Yeah, that's right. As soon as I finish filming this, I've got to throw my stuff in a bag. Well, I'm half done. In fact, yesterday I spent all day saying I was going to pack, and I was pretty much doing anything other than packing. It's always the way that it seems to go down. But as you say, yes, I fly to Florida. I'll be social distancing, as much as I can. But we'll talk about that later in the week or next week. But yeah, you're right, Lewis. Saturday night, it was just nice because it felt normal. For once, I was sitting down with my son and my wife and, you know, the other kids that aren't interested in UFC at all were doing their thing. But just sitting down, a bit of normality. You know what I mean? Rebecca made a nice curry. We sat down. We watched some fights, had a couple of beers. It felt like a normal time. And, of course, the fights were absolutely fantastic. We'll get into that, of course, in a bit. Lots to talk about. Fantastic fights, some upsets, some controversy. We'll get into all of that. But until then, Lewis, what have you been doing? How is things? How are things?
I've had a great morning. Overall, a very relaxing morning. I worked out for the first time since the quarantine started, essentially. I did one workout, but this was the first time I went and did a real one. I did a 25-minute run. I did 3 sets of pull-ups till fail, which was not much.
Which is 4 pull-ups, max.
5, 3.
Pull-ups are a nightmare. They're a disaster. I did back in tricep on Saturday before the fight, so I didn't want to do it. Sorry to hijack. Callum's like, come on, Dad. I'm like, oh, I can't be bothered. But he made me do it. And pull-ups, as you say, they're a nightmare.
They suck, dude. But you know what it is? Like, I know that if I just do them every day, I'll just get better at them and your traps get big. It's a great exercise. Your arms, your traps, everything. So I just did 3. It was the first day that I almost didn't do it. It was a moment where I was like, you know what? I'll start tomorrow. I kept on doing that over and over again. And then I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Just stop. Put down the video games. I started playing Warzone on Xbox. I was like, put the fucking video games down. Go out and go for a run. I ran for 25 minutes. It was nice. I was sweating. Little like light-paced jog, but worked up a really nice sweat. And now I'm very zen. I'm very calm. I remember why I like doing it. Michael Bisping setting up a studio. You guys can see he's setting up a studio. So
well, whatever Michael Bisping... Everything's falling apart. It's going wrong. I spent all day yesterday trying to fucking figure this out. The fucking phone. But I came in this. You don't understand. Before we started on air, there was a little bit of tension, you know, because things were going wrong.
Was there? Do I not understand?
No, I had a microphone stand that I can't find. I spent fucking ages putting these stupid soundproofing things. They don't falling off in the night. They're going to fall off. Halfway through the show, ba-ding, ba-ding, they're going to start falling down because we had some double-sided tape that was working great. Then we ran out of that, and then we switched to some other shit. Whatever. Anyway, we're still on 69,000, doggy. I'm like, we got to do something. I got to change the background. I got to get soundproofing pads. I got to do fucking something. But going back to what you were talking about the pull-ups, Callum, obviously, is on a wrestling scholarship. Pull-ups for any athlete are a big exercise. And I think 3 times a week, he has to do 100 pull-ups. And, of course, there's not much fat on him, nowhere near as much fat as I've got. So I've essentially got a built-in weights vest when I lift weights, when I lift my body weight, that is. And, you know, he talks a little bit of shit as he's there, just fucking banging out the reps one after the other. But I did want to say this. So this is the first workout you've done since quarantine started. Let me ask you, is that why you've got the hoodie on? Because typically when the weight starts to come on, people start to cover up. The layers start to come out, the baggy clothing, the hoods, things like that. Is this a conscious effort, Lewis, to disguise the flab?
No, my apartment's cold, but I will tell you right now, I also look fat as shit right now. Not because I've looked this fat for a while. I've always looked this fat. I'm no fatter than I have been on this show for the past few months. But because Michael Bisping decided that he's going to all of a sudden thrust us into a new camera angle, I was like, oh, now I have to have the same camera angle as Michael Bisping. I don't have the svelte. Even you look a little fucking chubby when you're sitting down like that. You know what I'm saying?
I'm hunched over, okay?
I know.
I just said it's a work in fucking progress. Rome wasn't built in a day. I had a day off yesterday. Well, not a day off. Fucking everyone's, every day is a fucking day off at the moment. But I had nothing to do. I'm like, okay, this is it. Because I was looking, I had to post a highlight of Saturday's main event. Right, and I posted it, and I don't know how, because I saw a clip on Facebook. You know, Facebook shows you the memories. Right? I put a highlight on there from 2 years ago, and Facebook says, "Oh, your highlight from 2 years ago." And I see it, and the angle's good, and you can see my arms and everything. But slowly but surely, it had evolved to where it's just my face, and I'm like, no wonder we're stuck on 69,000 subscribers. I mean, yes, am I a handsome man? Some may say, but nobody wants the face this close, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, right, I've got to do something.
This is going to sound counterproductive to growing our YouTube channel, but if you like watching us talk, you're a fucking weird person. I don't know what else to tell you. We're just sitting here looking at each other. Like, I like looking at Bisping. It makes it easier for us to do the podcast because I can see you and we can communicate and we can do the little fucking finger thing.
Well, now I can talk with my hands. I can go, whoa, stop. I can hold my coffee. I can do a plethora of things. I'll stop saying that now. And even my wife said, she said, Michael, you know, I like you. I'm married to you. But nobody wants to see a face that close up. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. So there you go. How far did you run, Lewis?
I did 25 minutes. I don't know, it probably was less than 2 miles, if I had to guess. I was running at a pretty slow pace. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, you get your heart rate up to, 70, 80%. I'm sweating. You know, I know my body and I know sort of how to do cardio to a certain degree. So it was actually a really good run and it really motivated me. It was just the first day that I've been, and I will say right now, I will thank the UFC because I think that there's something clicked because this weekend was sort of a return to normalcy for a lot of people. Not only just with the UFC, but around the country, a lot of restaurants opened back up. There was a certain thing that happened, and the UFC was for me the first thing that made me feel like, oh shit, wait a minute, like society exists. We're not just in this lockdown at all times. So it did sort of snap me into it. And today was the day, and I feel really good about it. And you guys are going to see, if you follow me on Instagram, it's going to get obnoxious.
I was going to say, if you follow him on Instagram, just be prepared. If this is a new venture, this is a new Lewis, this is Lewis J. Gomez with his sneakers on running through New York City. We're going to see stories. We're going to have epic rants and speeches about how good for you running is. It's this new thing that hasn't been around for millennia, but Lewis is doing it now. So therefore we're going to hear about it. And to be honest, Lewis, the way you're running for what you're trying to achieve, I mean, of course, you're not trying to be a sprinter, you're not trying to compete in races, just nice and steady. That's the best way to do it. Obviously, you got different, different heart rate zones, the fat burning heart rate zone, just nice and steady. If you're going, of course, you're working the heart and lungs, you're working the cardiovascular system, you're working basically your insides and getting fitter, but it's not that you'll still burn fat, of course, you will, because you're burning calories, you're expending calories, but it's not the optimum output for burning fat. So what you're doing, Lewis, and this is most people, if you're trying to burn a bit of fat, you don't have to go crazy. Nice and steady. Put your music on and just enjoy it. Enjoy steady jog.
I make it a meditative thing, right? Because look, you can do sprints and you could do interval training and there's massive benefits to that, but there's also the downside to it as well, which is blowing at your knees and grinding your joints and also just not complying, not wanting to get up and do those crazy sort of HIIT exercises and those routines where you're like, fuck, dude, I don't want to do this right now. Whereas a jog, for me, when I go on a jog for 30 minutes, it's legitimately enjoyable. Like, you sort of like get in your head, you start thinking about your day. I'm thinking, honestly, what I did was I thought about this show a lot. I started thinking about the fights and the main event and co-main event. And I don't really, because I'm sitting around playing video games all day and I'm distracting myself with my phone and the internet and social media, I never have that meditative time to myself. There's no steam room now. There's nothing. Like, literally, there's no time where I'm sitting there with myself except when I'm beating off, but no one wants to hear about that. But there's never a time when I'm being,
I'm sure Harrington does. How would you want to hear all about it? But yeah, not me and not the believers. No, you're right. I used to talk about this, didn't I? How when I used to go for a run, that was kind of my meditation time. And I do miss that. Thank you, Lewis, for rubbing it in. So carelessly. I can't run right now. I'm still in fucking agony. I've got one knee replacement. They told me when you get a knee replacement, you can't run. But I was destined to still run. And the doctor was like, okay, you can run, but just nice and gentle. And that's
all
I'm going
to
do.
Can I tell you, as you say that, the thing that I love most about running is just sort of being able to just see everything peripherally, like sort of both sides, just like what's coming on this side, what's coming on that side. It's just,
yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, geez, okay, so I got one knee, I got one eye. I can't run. Apparently the camera angle's all wrong. The fucking microphone isn't correct. You can hardly hear me. They're having to boost it in post production. I'm sorry, Lewis, okay? One day I might be as amazing as you, but until then,
he's sitting there freaking out about
it. Just fucking deal with it.
He's freaking out about sound panels. I'm like, Bisping, you fucking get your microphone 40 feet from your face. Fuck the sound panels. Don't worry about the sound panel.
Because, motherfucker, I bought a brand new fucking, microphone stand that will hold it right there. And I moved everything around yesterday. And I can't find the fucking thing. I'm so annoyed. It was only $26.99 on Amazon, but that's $26.99 out the window. I think he got thrown out with the rest of the shit. Until then, buddy, I'm going to lean over, you know, and it's got to be like this. So yeah, go fuck yourself. UFC did happen at the weekend, but I'll tell you what else happened at the weekend. And you know what? I don't know why I was thinking about this recently. Because a lot of people are pivoting. People have got to work. Restaurants, obviously, curbside pickup and that type of stuff. A lot of stores like Best Buy, you can still go there and it's curbside pickup. But strippers, the stripper industry, how are they going to socially isolate or distance themselves, Lewis? Because, I mean, that is just a massive contradiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard. You can't. I mean, look. That whole industry is actually taking a massive hit. It really has. Like strippers, they're not even getting strippers, what's it called? Unemployment. My understanding. That's because strippers aren't paying taxes.
Yeah, they're not filling in their forms. Come on. No offense to strippers, but you know, they're not out there. They're not filing taxes, as you said.
If you're a stripper and you're filing taxes, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Well, anyway, fortunately in Virginia, they've pivoted also. Now, the strippers have, bring up the article because I haven't got it here in front of me, but in Virginia now, they've gone from the strip club to an outdoor car wash. And then you drive up in your car, you sit there. I'm assuming they're jerking off in the car because, you know, they're in their own environment. And it's going to be the locals, you know, the same guys, and they have their girls and they wash the car. And they, you know, they gyrate and they jiggle and they sit there. And that's how they're getting their car washed now. You know, so now they're car washing their way through college.
Good for them. I got no problem. Absolutely. With it, you know? Bikini car wash, you don't see those anymore. That was a thing that was like back in the day. And I think it was because it was mainly inhabited by pedophiles because they were young high school girls. So it was just sort of like a stomping ground for perverts and pedophiles. So they're like, you know, maybe we should stop doing this. But the strippers got to work too. They all have like OnlyFans now. They all have like their own, like, so, but how would even a stripper get people to find out about their? I have no idea how they would market themselves. Like, what do you even do?
No. I think it's pretty simple. We're talking about one. We're not talking about a worldwide enterprise here. We're talking about one strip club in Virginia. Okay, never been to Virginia. Oh no, I went to Norfolk. Okay, I've been to Norfolk, Virginia. That's it. That's my experience. They've got a little strip club. They're like, shit, we need to make money. Let's put on a car wash. So all the locals, all the regulars of that strip club, now all of a sudden, you know, they've got the cleanest fucking cars their wife has ever seen in their life. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, I like this. You're really taking, you know, effort of your car, your presentation, your appearance, and you're going to a car wash three times a week, which is a little weird, but it's pretty simple. Just, you know, but it's pretty low, I got to say. You know what I mean? You're selling yourself short. If you're being a bikini car wash girl, come on. You can do better.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to hate it. I'm good for them. No, you know, they got to do what they got to do. I'm a fucking clown who tells dumb dick jokes on stage. So who am I to judge? But the reality is there's a flaw. There's an inherent flaw in that system, in that strip clubs are sort of anonymous, right? They have blacked out windows. You go there, you park your car sort of probably deep in the exactly. parking lot away from, like, you go there with, unless you're going with a couple friends, you go with, but nobody's going to get their car washed with friends. The only people going to a bikini stripper car wash are the perverted guys who go to strip clubs alone in their basketball shorts. And you don't really want your kids' teachers, your local pastor, the butcher. You don't want all these people seeing you partaking in that. So I have a feeling that it's probably not doing super well.
Definitely not doing well. Because as you said, if you go to a strip club and you're one of those guys that sit there at the fucking, like, the runway or whatever, you know, and you're tipping the girls, you know, then you're a sad bastard if you ask me. But still, as you said, it's discreet, it's private, it's dark. You know what I mean? You don't want it. The picture that I saw online, it was like a beautiful, nice, sunny day. And there's a girl, she's got a little bikini on, her tits are out.
That was her name, Sunny Day.
Pardon me?
That was a stripper's name, Sunny Day.
Oh, yeah, Sunny Day. She's a great girl.
Unbelievable.
But then you're sitting there in the middle of the afternoon, trying to look inconspicuous while a fucking girl and you're trying to get a sly jerk off. It's just not the same thing. I'm sorry. I like the effort. You know, it was inventive. You gave it a shot, but I don't think that's going to take off.
Also, Virginia strippers. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I've been to Virginia and I've been to some strip clubs in my day. I'm assuming these are going to be a dirtier breed of strippers. I'm going to have to go get my fucking car washed again after they crawl all over my car.
Well, so definitely the interior. Definitely. Yeah. The steering wheel might be sticky. You know?
But yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, good for them, man. I'm not hating, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be inventive. You got to do whatever you can do in this time. So
in this day and age, you know, a lot of people are going broke. You got to do what you got to do. Simple as that. So good for them. We're just having
So go support them. I'll tell you this much. If you're in Virginia, what town is it, Brian? Do you have the information? If you're in Virginia, go there. Tell them the Believe You Me podcast sent you guys and give them a nice big
use
fat
promo
tip.
Code BYM. You get 10%. You get your first dance for free on us. You're welcome. Anyway.
Let's talk MMA because we got to
let's do it. There's
you have to jump on a flight
about.
Soon, and there's so much, it was fucking crazy. What an amazing! We could probably do 5 podcasts just on the main event, co-main event alone. I think we should start with the main event, which was, I mean, more than lived up to the hype. I think it didn't go the way most people saw it.
Let's work up to it. We'll quickly comment on them. We'll stick with the main card. We'll do the opening fight. Which was, what was the, oh, it was Greg Hardy. There's not much to say there. Greg Hardy, Jorgen De Castro. Just remember, how did that end? I just had a blank. It was a decision, right?
Decision, yeah, for...
Yeah. Decision for Hardy.
Greg Hardy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, De Castro looked good in the first round, though.
He looked really good in the first round, then he stopped pulling the trigger.
Yeah, well, he might have got tired. I mean, there's a guy that certainly got heavy hands. He messed up fucking Hardy's leg big time in the first round with those leg kicks.
I think he ended up breaking it. I don't know if he broke his foot, but I know he hurt his foot in the first or second round. They showed the moment where he stopped, I guess, putting weight down on his foot. He really hurt his foot. Greg Hardy, I don't know, you know, maybe, you know, he just doesn't look like a UFC caliber fighter. Am I crazy? He's winning
better.
Fights. He's getting better.
He's getting better. He's winning fights. I got to listen, when he first came to the UFC, he's new to the sport. It takes time to develop these skills and to even learn the skills in the gym and then for them to cross over into real life combat. It takes a while. So give him a break, you know. But he's doing well. Saturday night, he was using a lot of feints, a lot of misdirection. He was fainting with his shoulders. He was fainting with his hips. It was good. Going back to De Castro, what you're talking about there, I used to do it all the time in the gym. You throw a leg kick and you're just a little bit out of range and you just flick the knee with your toes. And let me tell you, it fucking hurts. It hurts so bad. It really does. Fortunately, in a fight, when you got the adrenaline, you don't really feel it. But in the training room, you do it every time you spar. Every time. It fucking hurts. It's such a bitch. But yeah, listen, another win for Greg Hardy, you know?
Yeah. De Castro was good.
No, it's fine. Yeah. I was going to say, De Castro looks good. I'd like to see him fight again. I'd like to see De Castro go down to 205. He's certainly got the excess blubber to lose it to go down. He's exciting. He's got heavy hands. Fuck me. In that first round, he looked super dangerous. He was just, as you say, he broke his foot. I wasn't aware of that. Do you know what happened? So, and again, no disrespect to Hardy or De Castro. Sunday was Mother's Day. The prelim started. Saturday, I was like a little kid. I had my workout. And then I sat there, I watched the pre-fight show. And then we started watching all the prelims. And the prelims were great as well. Fantastic action on there. But I had to nip down the supermarket just to get a bunch of flowers and, like, you know, a card and shit for Mother's Day. But I'm like, if I wait to the end of the fight night, it's going to be closed. I'm like, fuck, shit. All right. As soon as Donald Cerrone and Anthony Pettis finished, I jumped in the car, flew down there. And when I came back, the fight was, you know, it was halfway through. So I missed a little bit of that one. So that's why.
Yeah, I ended up watching the whole main card. I was recording a podcast earlier, so I didn't even get to watch the Cerrone-Pettis fight. Obviously, I know the results of the prelims. But you know what's funny? This is kind of interesting. I don't even know. And how would I do this, Bisping? This is going to sound very dick-sucky. You might even make fun of me for this. But well, I really want to do this.
It depends how dick-sucky and whose dick it is.
So I turned on my ESPN app on my Xbox, and I went to go order the fight on Saturday night. Typically, I have to hit order fights. Do you want to order fights? Confirm. I do want to order these fights. $75 or whatever it is. It's a lot of fucking money. Do you want to do it? This time, I just clicked on the fights and they were playing on my ESPN app. Didn't pay anything. I got to check my credit card to make sure, but I believe that there was some sort of glitch and I didn't even pay for the fight. And what I want to, this is where you're going to say I'm dick sucky.
Yeah, because I was going to say, where's the dick sucking come in? I mean, so far, you're off to the races. You've got a free fight night and everything's cushy.
So what I want to do is I want to give the UFC the money. I legitimately want to give them the money. I run a media
company. Well, that's okay, because I'm flying to Florida today. So Venmo me $70. I want to see Dana White. I say, yo, Dana, Lewis owes you a bit of cash. There you go, buddy. It's fine. I got your back, Lewis. It's fine.
I'm saying like that, like, I don't know if there was a glitch and if they lost a bunch of money. I don't want to rat people out that didn't have to pay for it. Obviously, you know, if you ordered the fight, you ordered the fight. But I'm so happy with them doing it and them being the one company that took a chance that I want to give them the money for the fight that I bought. I don't want to just get the, if it's a glitch, they lost money. And I don't think that's fair. And I think other people should do the same thing. If you didn't pay, you got that fight for free. Fucking give the UFC money. I don't even know how you would do that. They don't have like a donation system, but it's kind of interesting. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's on an auto pay, but I really don't think it is.
It's funny. I was texting with Dana last night and he was telling me how broke he was. He said, listen, I need it like a GoFundMe or something. You know, geez, they're going to be okay. They'll survive. They'll get through. But that's very decent of you, Lewis. And I commend you. Good for that. Good for you. Because, you know, unfortunately, people do pirate, you know, and these people are out there.
Oh, I have pirated. I owe them way more money than that.
Well, shut the fuck up then, you hypocrite. What are you talking about? You know, but as you say, these need to be commended. You know, a lot of people were critical. They went out there and they put on a fantastic show and provided tons of entertainment for a lot of people. As I say, brought back normality. It was fantastic.
Mr. Bisping, we should talk about Naked Nutrition, which I love. That's what I snack on now. That's my new favorite snack, is the Naked Nutrition bars. But they have so many different products. Obviously, you could speak to it even at a higher level because you live off this stuff. It is natural, incredible products, things like protein, things like nutrition bars. If you are under quarantine right now, you should be at the very least taking care of yourself. It's easy to get lazy. Mm-hmm. It's easy to play video games and smoke weed and eat candy and cake and all that other stuff. But have a little bit of self-discipline. Do a little bit of working out. If you're working out, what you put into your body is probably much more important than even the workouts that you're doing to your body.
Yeah, listen, at the end of the day, if you go to the website, nkdnutrition.com, you're going to see all the usual stuff, as Lewis said. You've got the protein bars, the glutamine, you've got collagen, you've got protein, you've got pre-workouts. But the real difference is that it's naked, right? And what they mean by that is that there's none of the bullshit, none of the nonsense, none of the chemicals, none of the possibly cancer-causing substances. You know, if you continue to take this stuff 20, 30 years, who knows what that's going to do to you? And I talked about this on the last show, but my favorite thing right now is the Naked Energy. I'm telling you, this is by far the best, hands down, simple as that, money back guarantee from Michael Bisping, although I don't stand by that contractually, but I'm telling you, you will love this. I swear it is the best. There's no jitters. You don't feel crap. I've just started taking this. Instead of a coffee now, I just take Naked Energy and I'm off my tits all day, but in the best possible way, in a nice way. You feel energetic. We talked about it. I'm bonding with Callum. It's the best of course, the whey. There's one ingredient, which is whey protein, and then there's, you know, a couple of other natural things in there as well. So give it a try. You will not be disappointed. Go to the website, nkdnutrition.com. Take a look at the range. And as I say, this stuff is the best quality supplements that you will find out on the market right now. No bullshit. All the whey comes from tiny little farms, all grass-fed in California. So, you know, it's trust me, it's quality. And what do you want to put in your body? Safe, quality ingredients. If you go buy a steak, you want the best quality steak you can buy. If you're taking protein, you want the best quality protein that you can get. And if you're taking pre-workouts and you want to bond with your son and have your shirt off like a madman and just talking to the neighbors and the mailman nonstop, the Naked Energy is the way to go. And of course, if you want to give it a try, go to nkdnutrition.com. nkdnutrition.com. Use the code Bisping. You will get 15% off. Yeah, there you go, Lewis.
All right. Where were we?
I want to talk this. I want to talk about Francis Ngannou. Francis Ngannou and Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Before I strike. Before I talk about it, Lewis, give your take. Because obviously, I mean, as you don't even need, and by the way, you understand MMA at a pretty decent level. I'm not being insulting, but you don't even need a big understanding of fight knowledge or mixed martial arts in general. What you just saw there was just an absolutely brutal display of violence that anyone can understand. That crosses all barriers. You don't need to have seen a fight or a boxing match or any kind of martial art in your life to watch that. And then what you saw was fucking incredible and absolutely terrifying. But what did you make of it, Lewis? What's your take?
20-second knockout. Jairzinho didn't even have a moment to get off or sort of get his legs underneath him. Francis just charged at him and started wailing these big shots. And if Francis hits you, it's fucking over. I mean, you've talked about Francis Ngannou, even when he went through that sort of rough period where he had the Derek Lewis fight and, you know, he lost to Stipe. You've been talking about the way that Ngannou strikes for a really, really long time. And I'm not a striker. I'm not a mixed martial artist. So when you are a martial artist, you understand that at a higher level. So there's obviously something there. But you know, Rozenstruik, undefeated fighter, this is what he does. He comes in, he's a kickboxer, he knocks people out. So if it was obviously, it speaks volumes to how good Francis Ngannou is. It was so fast though, it's like it's hard to sort of, because everyone's going like, oh shit, this is the new Francis Ngannou. It's like, well, all of his fights since the Stipe fight, I believe it's like a total of like 2 minutes of fight time. It's all quick knockouts, 30, 45 second knockouts. So it's like he's definitely coming out and putting it on people faster. But it's sort of, you hear afterwards Cormier talking about maybe wanting to fight him. I want to see what's going to happen if he doesn't just blitz these guys and he has to go into later rounds with them.
Well, that's what we saw against Stipe Miocic. Stipe, I mean, listen, Ngannou, to his credit or to his defense, when he fought Stipe Miocic, was still learning the ropes of mixed martial arts, and you gain a ton of experience from a lost lad that going five rounds with a guy like Stipe, getting out-wrestled. You learn to reevaluate things and you realize that you need to work on other skills. I mean, a guy like Francis Ngannou that can knock anybody out, you know, you can be forgiven for falling into that false sense of security that you can just go out there and knock anybody out, you know, because up until that point, he had just gone out there and knocked everybody out. And since then, he's knocking everybody out. And I got to say, I mean, the way that finish, I mean, I said it a moment ago, so I won't go into it too much, but fuck me. I mean, you want to talk about MMA's version of Mike Tyson? Well, there you go. Look no further. Jairzinho, he's a very experienced guy. You know, I think he's only 11 and 1 now, or 10 and 1, something like that in mixed martial arts. But he was undefeated. I think all his wins were by knockout as well. I'd commentated a few of his fights, and they were, again, similar to Francis. That's why this fight looked so amazing on paper. But outside of mixed martial arts, Jairzinho had 76 kickboxing fights. But he made a big mistake. And here's what I tweeted this on Saturday night. It's easy for me, certainly here in this shitty fucking wannabe podcast studio that I've got going on now with fucking soundproof panels falling off the wall as we speak. It's easy for me to sit here and say this. It's very different when you're in there, right? But Jairzinho kind of made a mistake because Ngannou is all about the heavy hands, right? He doesn't really throw many kicks. Just comes out, looks for the opening, swings with everything he has. Jairzinho was throwing inside leg kicks, inside low kicks. And when you do that, typically, if you're a traditional style Thai boxer or kid boxer, one of the hands kind of comes down. So you expose your chin, okay? And then as a guy like Francis is coming towards you and you're backing up, which Jairzinho was, you don't throw inside fucking leg kicks, right? And he did it a couple of occasions. He threw one, and then as Francis was backing him up, he threw another one. Number one, an inside leg kick, whilst it is bothersome, isn't going to give any kind of damage to stop the forward momentum of a guy like Francis Ngannou. It's just not. It's not worth the fucking risk. You know what I'm saying? And your hands come down. What you've got to do, if a guy like Francis is coming on, you got to have the tightest of tight fucking guards. And you've got to be ready to block those shots and then look for a counter when Francis stops throwing. As I say, easy for me to say and break down after the fact. But Jorginho, I mean, that's his style. He's a kickboxer. And he was just trying to get warmed up into the fight. The fight hadn't even started yet. It was 20 goddamn seconds. But as I said, it's easy for me to say, but that's what he should have done. He should have had those hands fucking tight. I'm not even thinking about throwing a low kick. Number one, you don't throw low kicks while you're going backwards, right? And maybe some Thai boxing aficionados may disagree with that, but I'll tell you fucking right now, don't throw low kicks while going backwards and don't throw knees while going backwards. Look at, who was it? Jacare Souza. Jacare Souza, when he fought Yushin Okami. Yushin Okami got backed up against the fence and he tried to throw a knee and fucking Jacare just came over the top, massive right hand, and put him to sleep. So you don't really want to throw those kind of techniques as you're backing up. But amazing performance. And it was so funny, wasn't it, to see Ngannou being such a vicious killer. And then under microphone, he just say, well, you know, it was a great fight for me, and so calm and so nice and so relaxed. You know what I mean? He was just like, he sounds like the nicest person you could ever meet, but he's absolutely fucking terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, very, very much a quiet sort. And you don't need to have that crazy, brash bullet. You just don't. I mean, when
you don't need it.
I have his record right here.
When you're the scariest person in the room always, you don't need to shout.
Yeah, Jairzinho Rozenstruik, 22nd knockout. Junior Dos Santos, 1 minute and 11 second knockout. Before that, it was Cain Velasquez, 26-second knockout. Before that, Curtis Blaydes, 45-second knockout. I mean, this is just boom, boom, boom. And then you look at the Derek Lewis loss right after Stipe, and it's kind of interesting, and you can speak to this, I'm sure. Was there something probably going through his head where, like, fuck, dude, I just lost for the first time in my career. Stipe came and beat me. I lost a decision. I was fucking, you know, I'm assuming he sort of came in a little gun-shy. He was like, I can't lose two in a row. And because of that attitude, he ended up losing two in a row.
Yeah, absolutely. That's precisely what it was. Let's remember, here's a guy. He's from Cameroon, I think, not Nigeria. I had Nigeria in my head for some reason. He's definitely from Africa. We know that. But he's from Cameroon. And we've seen footage of him when he's gone back to where he's from. And, you know, it's a very underprivileged area. And that's putting it politely. You know, it isn't a particularly affluent area, far from it, the opposite in fact. And he was trying to build a gym, and it was you know, the guy comes from super humble beginnings. Okay, and now here he is, he lives in Las Vegas, he's fighting in the UFC, he's fighting main events, he just fought for the belt, and this is all because of the UFC. It's all because he is a fighter in the UFC. It's all because he wins fights. And here, there he is, he just loses. That puts on immense pressure because he doesn't want to go back to Cameroon. I mean, yes, of course, he wants to go back there through choice, but he doesn't want to be forced to go back to that kind of lifestyle. I had the same thing when I was fighting. I used to work fucking minimum wage, the shittest fucking minimum wage jobs under the sun. And that always kept me training hard because I didn't want to go back to that. I didn't want to go back to working all fucking week, breaking my back, but still being skint at the end of it. So definitely that will have played a factor. And of course, also on top of that, Derek Lewis, he's known for hitting just as hard as he was. So there was a lot of factors going into that fight, but you know, he's rebounded. And now he's on the cusp of a title shot. As we know, Stipe, DC, they're supposed to do it now. And it was funny, I think John Anik talked about DC fighting Ngannou on Saturday night, and they made a joke. But DC's come out now and said if Stipe doesn't want to do it, they should do Daniel Cormier versus Francis Ngannou for the interim belt. And I got to say, DC's got some fucking big balls on him.
Well, it's funny because I remember that joke that Anik made, and Anik essentially alluded to that DC wouldn't want to fight Ngannou, and DC just, it's such a moment because I have those moments with you on the show because you sort of make that, we're just, you know, making, we're not fighters, so we make these comments sort of in passing, and then the fighter comes out of you guys, and then DC was like, oh, just so you know, I would have him on his ass already. He was like, just so you know, we could kid around all you want, but I'll beat Ngannou. So DC, obviously, he thinks he could beat any man alive. The fight, really interesting when you look at a stylistic matchup, and I want to talk about that, obviously, but I want to ask you a question before we move on to the perspective. DC, Ngannou, could it be for a title, interim, whatever it is? When you look at, because you're hearing this a lot, right? Like, oh, shit, it's a new Francis Ngannou after Derek Lewis, do you believe that? Because you look at sort of the rise, right? He was knocking everybody out. He comes in, he gets this title shot. Do you think that he went, reflected on those losses, and now is a new fighter? Or is it sort of just a comparable rise? He's just coming up and knocking out all the guys that he's supposed to knock out in the row until he gets to the absolute best.
Yeah, so it's hard to say, isn't it? Because Rozenstruik is a kickboxer, he's going to stand. Dos Santos, predominantly a striker, you know, favors the boxing. Who else was there? It was Curtis Blaydes, I think. Was it Curtis Blaydes on there?
Yeah.
So Curtis is a wrestler, so that was a good, you know, it says that he's learned, you know, from being out wrestled from Stipe. And who was the other one?
Kane, who's also wrestled, but these are both super quick knockouts.
The Cain Velasquez one, he just fucking touched him and he collapsed. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. What I will say is that learning wrestling defense takes a long time. You know what I mean? It's not overnight, and you got to put the proof in. You know, it only comes from getting in there and actually fighting guys, and that's when you realize that you're making mistakes. So, we'll see. But I'll tell you what, I want to see DC fight Stipe for the third time. That's the fight that should happen. That's the fight that needs to happen. That's the fight that I want to see. But I got to say, I'm a little bit excited at the prospect of seeing DC versus Ngannou, because I would love to see how that goes down. It would probably be another rear naked choke victory for DC, or we could see DC get knocked out. I don't know. It's very fucking exciting. We've already seen Stipe versus Ngannou. And I'd like to see a rematch, of course, to see what he could do differently. But I want to see DC versus Ngannou as well. Man, that's a fight. I want to see that.
You got to give DC credit, because it's no bullshit. It's not like when guys are coming up and calling out guys that they're never going to fight. It's like, no. This could very well happen. DC, you know, it's no bullshit, dude. That's real.
John's great. He's awesome. And he did a fantastic job at the weekend. The whole production team, by the way, shout out to everyone there. I mean, they did such a great job. They had three commentators and they were all on separate desks for obvious reasons. And I wondered about the chemistry, because a lot of the time when you're commentating, you look at your co-commentator, and just like we do through the screen. You look at them and you got, you know, visual cues of when to speak and all the rest of it. I wondered if they'd maybe speak over one another on occasion, but there was none of that. They did a fantastic job and the chemistry was still there. But John saying that kind of forces DC into a corner, because what is DC gonna say? I mean he does joke and he's very humble like that. He will say, you know, fuck that, man, that guy's gigantic. But as you say, when the fighter element comes out, you know, the guy that wants to be the champion again, he's got no choice but to say, oh, fuck Francis Ngannou, I'll take him out. Obviously he was way more polite than that, but you see what I'm saying? All of a sudden, this fight is becoming a reality because Stipe's on the sidelines. I don't think they'll bring in an interim belt. I don't think that's the right thing, but who knows? Who knows when Stipe could fight again? And if he says that he's unwilling to, and this goes on for another year, then I guess the division would have to move on.
Well, here's the deal, right? So Stipe is not ready to come back. We don't know when he's going to come back. Is he working like as a first responder? Is he working as a fighter?
Apparently so, yeah.
Which is very commendable, but there has to sort of be hard criteria. Whereas, yeah, it's amazing. God bless, you know, Stipe for going out there and doing that. But I think 1 year, if at 1 year you can't defend your title, they strip you. Okay, there doesn't need to be all this other bullshit. If at 6 months, maybe there's no timeline of you coming back, maybe then do an interim title. We've talked about this for ages. They need to have hard criteria, so it's just easy to swallow. And it's nice. We know what's going on, so we don't know what's going on. Daniel Cormier said he would be interested. I believe, and Harrington, please, you're a little fact checker. But
he's a little
He's a little... So Harrington, maybe you could be our fact checker on this. But I think that DC said he wanted to fight, or he would fight Ngannou if it was for the title. I don't even think it was interim title. I think he was saying title, which is a little weird. It's kind of a bizarre thing, because why would you strip Stipe at this point? You're in the middle of a pandemic. Not only are you in the middle of a pandemic, I don't think you should strip anybody under these circumstances, because it's hard to train, it's hard to defend your title. But he's also out there on the front lines and actually being a first responder. So yeah, I couldn't imagine them stripping him of his title for this.
I think I read a quote though, didn't I, that Dana said, you know, if he doesn't fight at some point, then the division will have to move on. And of course, you know, yeah, they do have to, but I don't think they're there yet. I like what you said, 1 year. If you don't defend your belt within 1 year, I feel like there should be a hard and fast rule about that. As you just said, I'm reiterating, but I like that. 1 year, I mean, unless it's a really, really bad injury, If it's a bad injury that's going to take longer than a year to heal, then that's just really unfortunate. But generally, most injuries are going to heal up within 6, 7, 8 months. You know, even if you get a pretty serious surgery, 8 months, you're back on your feet. Then you've still got another 4 months to train.
So are you saying that if you have a serious injury and you know you're going to be out more than a year, then you can strip them before that, Mark?
I would. I wouldn't say that. But what I would say is, if you're gonna be out for over a year, then potentially, you know, they do an interim title, or they strip you, but you get the number one. You know, you get the next title fight when you're ready. You know, something like that.
I think it should be ceremonious. Look, August 17th, 2019 was the last time that Stipe Miocic defended his title, or that's the last time he fought. August 17th. At midnight on August 16th, if he has not defended his title, it's ceremonious. It's up for grabs. They have a press conference the next morning about what they're going to do, you know, and it's very clear-cut criteria. And it'd be kind of fun, to be honest with you.
It would solve problems. It would solve problems as far from the UFC being concerned, you know.
And it takes the onus off them. The UFC gets to go, look, this is what it is, you know, and the pieces would fall where they would fall.
Well, because, you know, I mean, I've talked about this a lot. When you're the champion, doors open, you know, and you get used to that luxury lifestyle. You get used to everywhere you go, everyone calling you champ, and you're staying in beautiful hotel suites. You're flying around the world first class. You're getting seminars and appearances and, you know, movie roles and all kinds of things because you're the champion of the goddamn world. Out of 9 billion people, one per weight class, and that's you. You're the man, you know. So I'm not saying fighters do this, but you could understand it if they were to stall it out a little bit. This would say, hey, listen, I got 12 months and I got a fucking fight. So it would solve problems. I like it. It's a good suggestion. And once more, Francis Ngannou scares the fucking shit out of me. Could you imagine? I mean, we talked about this when he beat Cain Velasquez, but I want to talk about it. Imagine you're at a bar. Francis Ngannou is in the bar. He's doing shot after shot. He's having an argument with his girlfriend, and then like someone puts his hands on him for him to calm down, and then he just loses it and fucking just starts, he's blackout drunk and starts going wild. I'm going up to my hotel room. I want no fucking part of that. Francis Ngannou swinging like a motherfucker. Fuck that. I'm out. DC, he's all yours.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. It's just terrifying. And this is why I give DC credit, because like he can just go out. There's big fights out there. There's so many fights that he could just go out on and look like a badass no matter what. Heavyweight, light heavyweight, doesn't really matter. But he does want to go after the best. He's like, dude, if I can't fight DC, who is the champion, I want to go after the next best guy. And also the sort of the scariest challenge. That is terrifying to say, I'm going to make my last fight this fight that, you know, you could just, the fight starts and then you're awake. You're like, what happened? Oh shit. It was over as fast as it started.
Yeah.
And that's your career. That's your legacy. That is fucking terrifying. That is not the fight that I would want to go out on if I was Daniel Cormier. And I think Daniel Cormier would win that fight. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, you know, they say a puncher's chance. If anybody's got a puncher's chance in the world, it's Francis Ngannou.
Yeah. And you know, those fights, fortunately, I've never been a part of one that's, you know, lasted 20 seconds. But I always think every time when that happens to somebody, they must think, well, I always think, because I know training camps are grueling, right? And they take it out of you and it's a stress and you break your body down and you make so many sacrifices. For what? For going out there to get knocked out in 20 seconds? He's a heavyweight. He, making weight isn't necessarily an issue unless you're absolutely gigantic. You know, he could have just sat on his ass for fucking entire training camp and gone out there and still got the same result. You know what I mean? So it's very frustrating, especially if you put a lot into it. Listen, Jorginho's a great fighter. He's an amazing knockout artist, heavy fucking hands. That's what made this fight so exciting. So Jorginho, just like Francis did against Stipe, he'll learn from this. He'll come back. It's his first loss. He was undefeated. I see a smirk on your face. You were looking at the laptop. What have you found?
I want to know if you know. I like this. It was Brantendo who sort of came up with this little game. But Michael Bisping trivia. Michael Bisping on Michael Bisping trivia.
Ooh.
Michael Bisping, what is your fastest knockout in your professional career?
Fastest knockout.
Or fastest fight. Fastest fight in your professional career.
I would say the fastest knockout was my professional debut at Pain and Glory 2 against Steve Matthews in 2004.
Wow. And do you remember what it was? The time?
What? 36 seconds.
Wow. Now, I will say that Steve Matthews has gone on to amass a 0-5 record.
You got to start somewhere, buddy. You got to start. Rome wasn't built in a day, okay? fucking asshole. At least I'm not out there fighting comedians in a rash guard. Okay.
Dude, I'll tell you right now, Steve Matthews might very well be a shitty comedian right now somewhere around the country.
Steve Matthews, and by the way, that fight was a heavyweight. Steve Matthews is a big dude. You know, I'm not talking shit about you, Lewis, but I fancy Steve Matthews' chance.
Would Steve Matthews beat me up? Dude, I'm calling out Steve Matthews right now. Come out of retirement, Steve Matthews.
Steve Matthews would fuck you up. And I tell you, I remember, and a lovely guy, Scottish guy, very, very nice guy, I remember. Because afterwards, so like all my mates, and then, you know, they were a rowdy bunch, we'll say that. They all came up on a coach, and they're all hammered. They're all absolutely fucking hammered. And it was 36 seconds. And one of them was being, we were talking at the bar afterwards, me and Steve. And, you know, all good sportsmen shaking hands, we're just having a pint. And, you know, and my mate's going, "You got fucking annihilated. Oh, annihilated. No. You should be embarrassed." I'm like, "Yo, shut the fuck up. What are you doing? What are you talking about? The guy just had a fight." Some people don't understand, especially when they don't know. Heads and they're wasted. You know what I mean? It's like, have a fucking heart. Anyway, never mind that. Enough about me there.
And that's Steve funny. Well, as it relates, it's funny because I remember one time I was doing an audition for Just for Laughs New Faces years ago. This is a very big thing for young comedians to get in. It's a showcase to sort of the industry. Like, they, you know, if you're in New York or LA, for the most part, they really just pick out of like the best of the best. And this is when I was a young comic and I was auditioning, and I did it years later, but this is maybe my first or second year auditioning for it. And I promoted it to my friends on MySpace probably at the time. I was like, "Come out and see me." You know, and I had these just the most obnoxious group of friends come out. They couldn't be any more obnoxious. And I go up and I do my, and
good guys, hollering. Great guys.
Yeah, of course. They're great to have a drink with. Friends. Yeah, if you want to get into a fist fight in a parking lot with someone, they're the best guys to have.
Yeah. But
to be good comedy patrons and make you look good to these people that are trying to impress and you're trying to audition for. So they're hooting and hollering during my set. They're being good audience members. But then they start booing other comedians on the showcase. They start fucking just being loud, drinking.
Having your back way too much.
Yeah. And they, to the point where, and I was like, all right, maybe the producers of the festival don't know that they're my friends. The producers came up to me. They were like, "Yeah, you know, you did good, but your friends, they were really obnoxious, huh?" And I was like, oh my God. Brutal. Yeah. And of course, I didn't get it that year.
I may have been that friend on occasion as well. So, you know, in case any of them are watching this and they're like, "You fucking asshole, Bisbee, I'm going to start a podcast and talk about you."
Hey, Mike, let's take a quick second and thank one of our incredible sponsors, which is the Ridge Wallet. I love my Ridge Wallet. It is really the coolest wallet you could possibly own. If you reach into your back pocket right now, what do you feel? A big, crappy, lunky hunk of leather. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants this old, crappy wallet that your grandma gave you for your 11th grade graduation. That's psychotic. The Ridge Wallet is a beautiful, minimalist front pocket wallet. It's really the size of your credit card, and it's designed to just put your ID, your cards, your cash in a really neat, futuristic-looking way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as we know, we've talked about this time and time again, we love the Ridge Wallet. It stops you accumulating all that trash in your pocket. You know, it's just nice and minimalistic. There's a little clip for the cash. Comes in a variety of colors, carbon fiber, aluminium, titanium, whatever you're looking for. And the main thing is you stop gathering all that crap that you don't need. And then, you know, when you're out and about, you're good, you're streamlined, you look sophisticated, you look futuristic, you look sexy, Lewis.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Can you please cut that as just a sound drop? You look sexy, Lewis. I want to hear that every time Michael Bisping says
one,
that.
One looks sexy. Not you, buddy. Not you.
Look, it really is great. It's over 30,000 five-star reviews on the internet. We're supposed to make it sound good. Go click around on Ridge.com. I'm going to tell you right now, they have so many different styles. You're going to find the right wallet for you. This is the coolest gift. Father's Day is coming up very soon. This is the Father's Day gift of the year, okay? If my son got me a Ridge Wallet for Father's Day, that's it. He would never have to get me another Father's Day gift for as long as he lives.
Yeah, that's right. Listen, at the end of the day, you rock up, it's Father's Day. Like, "Hey, Dad." Well, yesterday was Mother's Day. I got a bunch of flowers for my wife, and I didn't. The kids did. You know, the kids got a bunch of flowers and a card and some chocolates. Had I have rocked up with a Ridge Wallet, my God. I mean, I slept well last night, but I reckon I would have had a nice little send me off had I, you know, came up with a Ridge Wallet. So, as we said, it does have over 30,000 five-star reviews, which is just absolutely crazy. So obviously everybody that buys this, they absolutely love it. Give it a try. You will not be disappointed. And of course, we've got a great offer for you.
Yeah, all you
got
to do right now is go to ridge.com/BYM and use the code BYM at checkout. You save 10% off your entire order. Let me tell you something. You mentioned flowers for Mother's Day. Those flowers are dead in a week. Ridge Wallet's going to last a very, very long time. It's going to be honest with you, it's probably cheaper than a lot of the bouquets of flowers you're going to buy. Ridge.com/BYM. Go grab a Ridge wallet now. Save 10% off with that code BYM. All right, where were we?
All right, let's get into this one. This is a big one. Dominic Cruz, Henry Cejudo, Triple C. Go on, Lewis. I'll let you start and then I'll jump on afterwards. I tend to ramble on a little bit.
No problem. Look, this is the one fight that I ended up gambling real money. We did our Corona coin, and Harrington, chime in. You can give us a little bit of a Corona coin update here if you want. But I put a real bet too. I put $250 in real cash on a parlay of Francis Ngannou, Henry Cejudo, and El Kukui. So annoying.
Had you listened to me, what would you have won?
I would have won like $600 profit. $250 bet, $600 profit. So this was the one fight that I was like, oh, fuck. I was sort of questioning, like, was this a good bet? When you look at Dominic Cruz's skill set, and he's just a lot bigger. I didn't realize how much bigger he was than Cejudo until I saw them standing off and how much longer he was and how much, you know, reach advantage he had. And you sort of think about it. You're like, well, no, nobody really just takes Dominic Cruz down and holds him down and out-wrestles him. And then you really broke it down. I was like, can Cejudo land that one big shot? I started to psych myself out. And I was like, fuck, did I make the wrong decision here? And no, I didn't at all. And maybe in.
Well, you did. It was just in the main event.
Yeah, obviously. Well, not with that fight. But, you know, we'll talk about the questionable decision. I want to obviously get your take on this. Everyone wants to hear your opinion on this. But I think that it was Dominic Cruz looked good. He didn't look as good as he looked in the past. He didn't look as fast and as speedy and as elusive as he's looked in the past. But I think this was, in my opinion, Cejudo's coming out party, even though he's never tired, quote unquote. This was a big fight for him. I think he looked great. He looked incredible. He finished it with a knee, and then it was followed it up with, I think, 11 or 12 unanswered punches. Dominic Cruz complaining about the stoppage afterwards. He was getting back up. I want you to obviously break down what you saw before I give my opinions on the stoppage. But Cejudo, I thought this was a career-defining performance for him, just in that Dominic Cruz is such a legend. And then it was the first time in a little while where I was really questioning whether or not, like, what his path to victory was going to be. And he really showed that he was just fucking incredible.
Yeah, well, I mean, we spoke about this. Jesus Christ, that was a stuttering marathon there. We spoke about this, or I spoke about this on the pre-fight show, if you will, saying that he can't chase Dominic. You know, you think of the bull and the matador. You know what I mean? That's what Dominic would have been. He would have been the matador. Just ole, ole, all fucking day had he come in. And Cejudo did the right thing. He didn't chase him for the most part. He cut off the cage and slowly worked him back up against the fence. Cruz was looking for those escape routes. He was looking for, you know, to use his footwork and get out of there. But, you know, Cejudo countered perfectly. Cruz tried a few times to take him down because he's a very, very good wrestler. The hips and the reactions of Henry Cejudo were absolutely fantastic. And you could see that Cejudo was throwing the heavier leather out of the two of them. First round definitely belonged to Henry Cejudo. It was a 10-9. I think it was the first round. He got that beautiful takedown, picked him up, high-crotched him, slammed him. Cruz is good, though. He got right back to his feet, so fair play to him there. But, you know, I mean, it was. You could see, in my opinion, and no disrespect to Cruz, he's one of the best ever. He's one of the best ever bantamweights that we ever saw. But I think Cejudo was always going to win that fight. Right from the opening bell, you could just see the way he was sitting down on his shots, the way that Cruz was trying to avoid it. I only saw one victory, really. As I say, Cruz is fucking awesome. He's a longtime champion. The way he came back after all that time to beat TJ Dillashaw was phenomenal. You know, but you can't always do that, especially as you start to get older. And unfortunately, this fight game is a cruel mistress in that regard. And, you know, this is an insult to Dominic Cruz, but if you look a lot of the time, what I saw on Saturday night, and he does this previously, when he throws his right hand, he kind of looks at the floor. He dips his head a lot. He dips his head a lot and he wings that overhand right and he's essentially looking at the floor. That's what he looks like to me. I don't want to offend Dominic and no doubt I'll get a nasty text when he sees this, but he kind of looked at the floor and I just think maybe Cejudo had seen that because he was looking for that knee and he threw that knee and it connected beautifully. But there's no doubt. I mean, hey, great chin on Dominic there because that would have put a lot of people out because he dipped into it. So it's two forces combining in the middle. So that was terrific that he took the knee, but he definitely got dropped. Listen, as you said, well, as everyone said, it was 10, 11 or 12 unanswered punches. They weren't putting him to sleep, but they were definitely big shots. They were significant enough to where, had it been stopped earlier, there wouldn't have even been this discussion. If it was stopped 4 or 5 shots earlier, he would have been down. Now, okay, he was kind of backing his way up to the fences, starting to try and get up, and Cejudo was still teeing off. Referee stepped in and stopped the fight. Had he not stepped in and stopped the fight, Cejudo would have also been back to the feet, and I think he had an underhook here, and he was digging these shots in. And if Cejudo would have been on the feet as well, those shots on Cejudo would have been on Cruz would have been way more significant. He would have been able to generate more power. He'd just been dropped by a big knee. He'd just taken 12 unanswered shots, and then a couple more one on the feet. You know, listen, the referees are there to try and stop injury, to stop real nasty permanent injury. Not there to stop black eyes and cuts and a bloody nose. They're there to stop you getting brain damage. They're there to stop you getting life-threatening or career-ending injuries. And that's why the referee stepped in. I had no problem with it. Listen, I get Cruz is pissed off. We'll get to that in a minute, but let's just keep it on Cejudo, actually. Because, as you just said, Dem, what Cejudo's done, it's just unbelievable because I remember, and everybody said it against TJ Dillashaw, when it was that quick, TJ did the same thing, right? He was like, this is bullshit. That was a bad stoppage. But when you look at it, it happened so fast, it wasn't a bad stoppage. He got fucking dropped and it was a very similar scenario. And then against Marlon Moraes, same thing. He'd beaten Demetrius Johnson, okay, by decision, but still these fucking names that he's taking is just unbelievable. And then he goes out there and does it again to Dominic Cruz. What I'm trying to say is, this is not a fluke. This is not a fluke. He's doing it time and time again, and he is stopping people and just looks absolutely fucking phenomenal. I mean, listen, he had that whole thing. He started getting a little cringy or whatever, and maybe people didn't take him quite as seriously as what they should have done. But I tell you what, if you don't take Henry Cejudo serious, then Jesus Christ. I mean, he says he's retired. We'll get into that as well in a minute. But, I mean, come on. He's going to be one of the greatest pound for pound in the world right now. Simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's definitely, when I say he's coming to his own, it's like, it's hard to put him in that conversation. Number one, he's champion of two divisions that, no offense to them.
Well, he got switched to 25, but I know what you're saying.
Or he was champion of two divisions, double champ of two divisions that weren't like, it's not like they have these long, I'm not saying they're not tough. They're probably tougher in a lot of ways than some of the larger divisions, but they don't have these long story divisions where like these champions have been holding on to the title for a long time. It's like, they're fairly new just in the sort of the fans' minds and they're smaller guys. So I think it takes a lot more for those smaller guys to get over on the fans, and he's particularly small. You know what I'm saying? Like, Cejudo looks small for a small guy. So I just felt like the king of cringe shit. It was sort of like, I wasn't really getting it for a while. And I'm very much like, I'm a pretty hardcore fan, but I have much more the casual perspective. I'm not hardcore like you are. And it's like, for me, it was like, this is kind of cringy. It's kind of annoying. Then a couple times, though, he slapped the snake on the ground. I was like, this is so stupid. But I'm laughing. He's like winning me over. Well, and I'm going like,
You're laughing. You're laughing along, and he's entertaining you. I mean, when you say you're not hardcore, you mean you're not hardcore going on the forums and talking shit.
Yeah,
I
just
don't watch generally all the fights.
I watch everything. Yeah, I'm a hardcore.
It's annoying, but it's bringing something to the table.
But I think my perspective is definitely much more so of the people that the UFC are trying to sell fights to, right? So I'm a guy who buys fights for the most part every time.
That returns the money to Dana White if you get it free.
Very respectfully.
Hey.
But I was sort of cringed out by Cejudo, and I didn't really like it, and I was like, And now, for some reason, this was the performance where I went, holy shit, fuck yeah, dude, Cejudo's the man. He came out and he put it on Cruz. And he sort of has hit his own stride with sort of his own little cringiness. He calls himself the king of cringe. I was starting to like him a little bit.
No. He calls himself the Triple C.
Did you call him the king of cringe?
Many people call him the king of cringe because he's a cringy little fucker.
He right? mentioned himself being cringy. He just did.
Yeah, no, for sure. He's embraced it. He knows. For sure. He's embraced it. He knows it. He plays up to it. But again, it was good because now, to be honest, you do kind of anticipate a little bit of that. Now, of course, he says he's retired. We'll get into that in a second. But, you know, when he came out and he pulled out the pillows with the faces on and whatnot, you know, I like it. We're waiting to see, okay, what's he going to do this time?
And, exactly. What's he going to do next? That's a great way to put it. What, even if you don't like him, you're going like, what is he going to do next? It's the old Howard Stern thing that, you know, the people that liked him listened for 2 hours and the people that didn't like him listened for 3 hours and they gave the same response.
Howard, can you bring up the exact quote of what Dominic Cruz said after the fight? He did an interview about the referee, Keith Peterson, talking about the alcohol and the cigarettes.
And while he does that, I will say, I want to piggyback on what you said. I agree with you. I don't think it was an early stoppage. I think the fact that people are freaking out about this, even the commentators, I got to be honest with you, Rogan and DC were sort of stuck on the fact that it was this early stoppage. And I'm going like, well, not really. I mean, is it the referee's job to see that there's only 10 seconds left and to let it go? I don't know it's really the referee's job there. It's the referee's job.
No. That's why you often see, not often, but sometimes you see fight stopped with 1 second left because the referee's job is to watch the fight and the fighter safety is paramount. Okay, they're making sure that the fighters are adhering to the rules, making sure no one's fucking being illegal, nobody's doing an eye gouge, kneeing in the balls or whatever. But they're also watching the fight to make sure that fucking people don't get hurt. And if it's looking like that, then they stop it, just like in the main event, which we'll get to later.
And I think when you look at the stoppage again, right? So when you saw it at first, even I was like, oh, it was kind of quick, right? But then you watch it again in slow motion and you go, oh shit, he hit him like 12 times or 11 times. And even one of the times you saw Dominic's arms give out where it was like he hit him again and hurt him again. It's not only was it a good stoppage, it was kind of a great stoppage. The referee's not seeing it in slow motion like we're seeing it. He doesn't have the instant replay the same way that we have it, right? So I believe it was a really, really good stoppage.
He's got a drop with the knee there, and there it is. He's on the floor. He's got the turtle position, and he's pounding. He's getting up, and then he stops. I mean, listen, he wasn't on his feet. So as I say, he had the turtle position. What I mean by that is Cruz was on all fours, and Cejudo was on all fours next to him on his knees with one arm over his back. So he's controlling him, okay? He's controlling Cruz, and he's using this arm to just swing totally unanswered blows. And you can get a lot of power in with that, you know what I mean? You just see now, I mean, ooh, look at the significant power that I can generate, Lewis, especially with these hips, you know, at this new camera angle. It's like, whoa, it's crazy.
Can somebody make a GIF of that, please, and put it to some music?
It looks like I'm dancing, but that's what he was doing.
Believe you me, dance. Do the Bisping.
And do the Bisping. Well, what's the Lewis then? If that's the Bisping, what's the Lewis?
What's the Lewis?
Anyway, so he's up top. He's in turtle position. He's fucking pounding him. Referee dived in. I mean, just from that little snippet that I saw there, I had no issue with it. You know, it's a shame. I understand Dominic's pissed off. You always are. I've had fights afterwards where I was like, that should not have been stopped. I was fine. Dominic implored afterwards. He said multiple times, I think, on the microphone, he said, I told the referee, do not stop this fight. Guess what? Before every single fight I had, the referee comes into your locker room and says, I'm going to be the referee for the bout. You got any questions? And then they go through, you know, their protocol. Every referee, you know, whilst they have rules, they, you know, they're individuals. There's certain things that they look for. More importantly, they said, you know, I'll say to you know, you've got to defend yourself or whatever. But if you've been knocked out or it looks like you've been knocked out, they're going to stop it right then and there. But I used to always say to my referee, hey, don't you fucking stop this fight. Don't worry about me. Even if he drops me, I'm good. Don't stop this fight. And he says, hey, you do your job, I'll do mine. That's all you got to say.
It's the same conversation with every fighter before every fight.
It's the same conversation with every fucking... Everyone. Every fighter, unless you're a pussy, is saying, hey, just don't stop this fight, okay? Because I want my win bonus and I want to win. If there's a fighter that when the referee comes in and the fighter says, all right, listen, here's what it is. I get dropped and it looks like I'm hurt. I didn't want to take 12 unanswered blows. So you better do your fucking job, referee. And the ref's like, hey, you just do your job, I'll do mine. Don't worry. I'm going to stop this fucking fight, buddy. Don't you? Nobody's saying that.
Hey, look, dude, if I take even one or two unanswered blows, you get in there and you protect me, okay?
If I get hit so hard that I fall back and my arms flail and my eyes roll back in my head, you better stop this fight, buddy, because I'm out. Nobody says that. Okay, no, and I understand Dominic's frustration. Of course, he thought he was going to be champion of the world again. I mean, what a storyline that would have been. And yeah. He worked hard and he had a comeback. You know, he was excited for it. It didn't go his way. It's frustrating. It is. And I get it. I understand it. I understand it. But, you know, it's just unlucky for Dom.
Yeah.
Listen, the better man won on the night. You can't argue that. Look at the form Cejudo's on. This is what he's done to a lot of his opponents. And unfortunately, Cruz was the next in line. You know, it's just the way it goes. So what was the actual quote that Cruz said, Harrington, afterwards? Because I know what was the actual wording?
So he had an issue with referee Keith Peterson. He said the guy smelled like alcohol and cigarettes, so who knows what he was doing. I wish they drug tested them. I know Herb Dean is good. He's one of the best refs. Immediately when I saw that ref, I was like, man, is there a way to veto a ref and get a new one? I wonder that. As fighters, do we have that choice? I wish we did.
I think you do. I think if you did it in advance, I don't know this for a fact. I'm assuming, but one would assume because you can, you know, you get your bout agreement, you know, you agree to terms, you got your money on there, you got this, that, and the other, your main event, you get extra cornermen, you get a suite, you get first class flights, yada, yada, yada. If you had a real issue with a referee, and at that point in advance, you said to the UFC also, I'd like to listen, I have a personal issue with this guy. I don't think he's a good referee. I think he's incompetent. I would think the UFC would allow that because, you know, there's four or five referees rotating on the night. You know, so, all right, if you don't like that guy, you've got such a fucking issue, we'll give you one of the other ones. As I say, I don't know that to be a hard and fast rule, but I'm assuming one would think that if you did that in enough time, you know, then, yeah, I don't think it would be an issue. And again, as I say, I mean, the whole comment with the alcohol and the cigarettes, I mean, well, all right, the cigarette thing, it's not illegal to smoke cigarettes.
So what?
There's so fucking what. If he's backstage and he's in between fights and he's not fighting for three fights and he nips out and has a quick puff before he fucking goes back out there to work, you know, I understand what Dominic's saying. He's clutching at straws. He's trying to piece it together. But the alcohol thing as well, I mean, definitely don't want to be smelling of alcohol when you're doing something so serious. But I think he's probably just lashing out.
It's kind of a dangerous way to lash out, though. It's like you're trying to essentially destroy a man's career. I mean, I like, you know, not for nothing, you know, Dominic lost that fight. You know, people make excuses. It sucks when people come out and go, I was sick, I had an injury, it's just, you hear that when you hear people make any excuse, you go, you kind of roll your eyes and you go, ah, dude, just fucking don't put a microphone in his face. He lost. He shouldn't be talking about it right now. He's emotional. But then and say that, and I'll give Dominic Cruz the benefit of the doubt. And the only, if you give Dominic Cruz the benefit of the doubt, you have to really take a lot away from Keith Peterson. You have to be, if you give Dominic Cruz the benefit of the doubt, you have to say, yeah, well, Keith Peterson should be fired because he's coming in drunk and refereeing fights. I don't really know how fair of an accusation that is because, to be honest with you, I just don't believe it, really. I don't believe that Keith Peterson got hammered and then started refereeing fights. And I think if he did, other people would have noticed that and it would have been a problem before it got to the co-main event.
Well, here's what I want to know. If Keith Peterson was getting hammered the night before, I want to know where he was. I'm going to be in Florida later today. I land. To my knowledge, all the bars are shut. Okay?
No, they're open. They're open.
Let's do it, baby boy. I'm like, Keith, where are the spots? No, I was going to say, if you give, you know, it all depends how you perceive benefit of the doubt. My benefit of the doubt to Dominic is that he'd just been, you know, not knocked out unconscious, but he was dazed, he was confused, he was concussed, I would say, right? And you're trying to piece it together. Like when I got knocked out against Kelvin Gastelum, right, I got on the microphone and they said, are you going to retire? I said, no, it'll take a bigger piece of shit than that to get rid of me. I had no idea. I don't know. I said that from memory. I only know that because I saw it back, right? You have no idea where you are. And I remember I went into my locker room and I was there and some people came in. There was a couple of people that I worked with on a movie, some actors, some Chinese people. They came in to say hi and all the rest of it. And you're trying to piece it together and you're trying to pretend that everything's normal, when in reality, everything's not normal. But because of the arrogance of the fighter, right, you don't want to admit that you're fucked up because that's even giving them a bigger win. That's saying to your closest and dearest, which you should be able to be honest with, you know what I mean? Maybe your wife or whatever, but outside people that you don't know that well, you're like, oh, yeah, no, I'm good. But in reality, I have no fucking idea where I was. Well, what was going on? The conversations. I would have the conversations, but then they're immediately gone from the mind. I immediately forget the topic of conversation. You've just been dazed. You might not have been unconscious, just like I wasn't in the gasoline fire. I wasn't fucking out asleep. Do you know what I mean? But I was definitely fucking out of it. He got me with a good one. And same with Cruz. So as I say, the benefit of the doubt, he was still trying to piece it together. He was still dazed and confused. And he was trying to find, I won't say an excuse, because that's a tough word, but he's clawing together a defense, if you will.
Yeah, he's emotional, right? So I have a question. Sorry, because I didn't. Did he say that right after the fight?
No, he said it backstage. He said it backstage, talking to Megan Olivia, I believe. I did see it, but as I say, I remember in my last fight, I was in Shanghai. We're in the locker room. Right, and Brady and Perillo were there, and a couple of actors came in, and they're chatting away, and I didn't know where I was, I didn't know what I was doing, but I'm piecing it all together, and I'm trying to pretend that I'm normal. Same with the Dan Henderson fight when I got knocked out there, do you know what I mean? I've been there many times. You don't know necessarily what you're saying, right, or what's going on, or where you are. You're totally shell-shocked. You're confused to fuck, right, because you kind of get it. All right, I was in there. I'm here. I'm in the arena. I can see that. I can see because you know presently what's going on, but it leaves your consciousness pretty quickly. But I know I'm in an arena. I know I'm at a UFC event. I remember I was training for a fight. I had the fight. Okay, well, obviously I've lost. And you don't want to make it a bigger spectacle. Number one, you don't want everybody fussing over you and saying you've got to go to the hospital. You don't want headlines on all the fucking websites on Monday morning saying, oh, he was so fucking out of it. He didn't know where he was. Because again, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing as fuck. And thirdly, you've got your pride as a man. So you try and pretend that everything's normal. Everything's okay. Okay, he got me. Motherfucker, move on. So as I say, to Cruz's defense, I don't know if he was that bad or not. And of course, if he hears this, he'll say, what are you talking about? I wasn't like that. And again, goes back to what I just fucking said. We have our pride as men. You say, oh, I was totally fine. What are you talking about? Didn't fucking bother me. I said, when Vitor Belfort head kicked me and I lost an eye and I went down afterwards, I'm like, what the fuck, man? I said to my coaches, I never said it on the microphone. I said to my coaches, fucking, well, that was a fucking early stoppage, wasn't it? When I've seen it back, I'm led on the floor in the fetal position. He's fucking dropping elbows on me. You know, didn't look that early. In hindsight,
in the moment,
I'm like, what the fuck, man? This is another stoppage.
Hey, I told you, let go.
Hold on. Canvas.
Hold on, this is funny. I told him to bring up Keith Peterson responded on Twitter, and he said, Me in the morning after a night of drinking and smoking, and it's just the picture of Dominic fucking on his ass.
God, that is fucking hilarious. I tell you what, he's got to be careful. I don't know if it's a smart move to be beefing with not only MMA royalty and UFC broadcasters and commentators and making light of it. But listen.
Good for him. Fuck that.
Dom threw the first punch, I guess. You know,
Let me tell you something. Dominic Cruz should apologize to Keith Peterson publicly, personally, unless Keith Peterson was legitimately drunk, which I don't believe he was.
Here's what Rebecca said, because Cruz said that, and yesterday I was talking about it. I thought, oh shit, I said Cruz has said this, and Rebecca's like, well, I always said he looked like a drinker. I always said he had a puffy face, you know, and I'm like, babe, come on. I'm like, you don't know. She said, every time she saw him referee a fight in the UFC, she's always like, he looks like a drinker. I'm like, no, he doesn't. He's like, he's puffy. Like, he might have a shitty diet. He might have a lot of carbs. He might have a very, very high sodium intake. Okay, we don't know this. You can't call the man an alcoholic. Keith Peterson, who knows? Maybe he doesn't drink. He looks like he does, but maybe he doesn't. We don't know. Find out. If he's refereeing Wednesday or Sunday, I'm going out there. The bars are open. Keith Peterson, I'm your wingman. Let's go. I'm joking. I take my job very seriously.
I got to be honest with you. It's an even playing field, though. Keith Peterson's drunk for both of them. They both get a drunk ref. I don't know. Don't lose the fight. Don't get kneed and 12 punch in the head.
If
12 times.
If you dropped him, it would have been an early stoppage for Cejudo. But you didn't. You got dropped.
Oh, and also, I will say this. If you go into an MMA bout and you notice that your ref is drunk, say something right there and then. Just stop everything. Just wave your hands in the air and say, hey, that guy's drunk. Because in retrospect, it looks like you're making excuses. I don't believe that Dominic believes he was drunk. I think that it's fucked up. And you sort of drag this guy's name through the mud. Dominic is a massive star, massive legend.
I mean, think about it. I mean, I've had some epic sessions. But if you're drunk, still drunk the night before... I mean, there's on the East Coast as well. So that fight was taking place, let's say it was 9 o'clock at night. That's midnight. It's midnight on the East Coast. You must have fucking drank a lot to still be under the influence at midnight the next day. You know what I mean? So as I say, listen, we'll leave it there because I don't want to shit on Dom. I respect the hell out of Dom. He's a tremendous fighter. He's a great colleague to work with. And he's hurt. That's all it is. Listen, we invest our entire lives into this sport. You know what I mean? And it can be, you get the biggest reward you could ever imagine. It's also the cruelest motherfucker ever. You know, you go out there, you fail, you lose half your money, you're embarrassed in front of the entire world. Everybody's talking about it. Every MMA podcast is dissecting this right now. You know what I mean? Dominic's hurt. He's a little embarrassed and he's just trying to save face. And it's only human nature. That's human. If you're hurt and you're embarrassed, then yeah, you say things to try and fucking alleviate that. And that's what Dom's doing here, you know, subconsciously or subconsciously. That's pretty much what's going on. So Dom, unlucky, man. That's just the way the fight game goes. You know, that's it. That's the way it goes sometimes. And Henry Cejudo, let's talk about his retirement real quick.
Yeah.
What do you think?
He's not retiring. It's stupid. He even said something afterwards, something like Dana White knows the number to get me to come out.
Oh, did he really? Because I saw yesterday, I forget who it was, somebody tweeted, they said, it might have been Helwani. I think it was Helwani. Helwani tweeted, apparently Cejudo wanted a massive pay rise prior to a last fight or something, and he never got it. So maybe it looks like it's a contract negotiation to me, and I noticed that Dana's not taking the bait. Dana said straight away, in a heartbeat. I'll match up Piotr Jan with whoever it is. He said, I'll make that match up tomorrow. That's what he said. So he's like, and that's not the way to go about it with Dana. You know, if you're trying to like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Trying to play hardball, if you will. You do what you got to do. Do what you think is right. But I don't think he's retired. If he is retired, though, I respect that. You go out, you become Olympic champion of the world. You come to the UFC, you beat Demetrius Johnson, TJ Dillashaw, Marlon Moraes, and Dominic Cruz, and then say, bon voyage. Thank you very much. Take care. That is the way to do it. Of course, people always stick around far too long because of the allure, because of the paychecks, because of the attention, because of the star power, the celebrity that it brings to you. You know, there's many reasons why fighters outstay their welcome, if you will. You know, if Cejudo wants to retire, it'd be a fucking baller move, but he's leaving a lot of money on the table, so I don't think he will.
It's also, I mean, look, yes, I do believe that he's done a lot. Winning an Olympic gold medal, two UFC titles in two different weight classes, it's incredible. Nobody else in the world has done anywhere near that, right? But I think there's so much more to be done. I mean, when you look at the fact that he has a loss to Demetrius Johnson, has a loss to Joe Benavidez, who I love Joe Beno, but let's get real. I mean, that loss should be haunting Cejudo right now. Only six fights ago. This is not that long ago. We are talking about 2016. He's got recent losses. There's more to be done at that weight class, without a doubt, unquestionably. And not for nothing, if he wants to talk all this shit, if you want to know what I want to see his Cejudo do, and then he will be in the conversation as pound for pound best. Not even beat Benavidez. Move up to 145 and really challenge yourself.
Well, that's right? What he's talking about doing now. He's talking about fighting Volkanovski, right? Yeah. And Jesus Christ, I don't know if they do that. But what he needs to do, I mean, George St. Pierre, as we know, inducted into the Hall of Fame on Saturday night. We always talk about it. It's one of your points, is that he avenged all those losses. You know, and Benavidez beat him. Close fight. There was a point deducted, I believe, which definitely played a factor in it. If he wants to be considered to go down as the greatest of all time, even over George St. Pierre or Anderson Silva or whoever else lays claim, Khabib Nurmagomedov, whichever it is, if he really wants to lay claim to that, he needs to avenge that loss to Joseph Benavidez, who's still around, who's still fighting, who's probably fighting for the 125 belt pretty soon against Deiveson Figueiredo. I think they're going to redo that fight. So you're right. He's still got a little bit of a business to attend to.
I think so much so. I mean, when you consider the best of the best, you know, you're considering the guys who, and we'll take Michael Bisping out of this. You know, it sounds very, you know, ass-kissy when we put you in there. We're not even going to talk about Michael Bisping.
I don't want to be in there. I don't deserve to be in there.
But you talk about GSP. You talk about the Anderson Silvas. You talk about the, you know, the Randy Couture's, who obviously the Tito Ortiz. You go back through the history, right? The history books of mixed martial arts. These guys had you know, just victory after victory after victory. They cleared out divisions to the point where it's like, you know, GSP had to like go away and let the sport evolve to catch up with him. I don't think that Cejudo's done that. So, and I don't know how much of it is a bit, but when he talks about himself, like he should be on the Mount Rushmore of MMA, that's where I'm like, well, maybe, dude, let's see, you know, don't retire now.
No. Listen, the Mount Rushmore of MMA, and you're the American here. I've never been to Mount Rushmore, but I believe there's like some oldie worldy types, maybe the founding fathers, Abraham Lincoln type of people all up in there. So I say you need some old school MMA fighters. You can't have fucking Henry Cejudo. I mean, listen, you could have Henry Cejudo. You could maybe chip him into the nose of Randy Couture or something because he's that small.
He's a booger.
You
know what he's I mean? He's like,
all of a sudden, Randy Couture has a wart. Okay, I'm not saying Randy Couture should be in the Mount Rushmore of MMA, although he's a solid choice, but still, just like...
Is Henry Cejudo stuck in Randy Couture's tooth?
You know what I mean? Fucking Henry Cejudo's on the neck. You know what I mean? Me. Yapping on.
Mike, we should take a quick second and talk about the benefits of CBDMD. I love CBDMD. Incredible products. CBD, if you don't know, it is the non-psychoactive component of hemp or marijuana. It's legal in 50 states. It does not get you high. It is designed to help you get your body back into homeostasis. It makes you feel better. It puts your body back to the way that it's supposed to be, which can help with things like physical pain, anxiety, sleep issues. Just go onto Google right now and Google, hey, I'm having this issue. Will CBD help? There's a good chance that it will.
It will. It definitely will. Oh, I think it will. And also, I'll tell you what else it will help with. I've been looking on social media. I'm talking about from my own experience and your experience as well, Lewis. You know, quarantine, we're all putting on a little bit of weight, unfortunately. We're sitting around, we're not moving as much, you know, and you want to work out, you want to be healthy. But there's a little bit of anxiety with feeling sore the next day. I certainly feel that when it's leg day, I can't walk around for a couple of weeks. But fortunately, we got the Recover from CBDMD. You rub this stuff on, you know, it certainly helps alleviate those, the stiffness, the stress, the pain. And as you said, there's a ton of different products. You know, it's the thing with CBDMD that makes them so good, some of the best quality CBD you will find and some of the best prices per milligram on the market. So listen, there's a lot of brands out there, but let me tell you, I've been with CBDMD for several years now, and they are simply the best. Give them a try. You will not be disappointed. As Lewis said, if you've got anxiety, trouble sleeping, soreness from lifting weights, you know, moving immense amounts of weight like I do, aches and pains, you know, surgeries, I've been rubbing it on my legs, you know, it helps with a plethora of issues.
Yeah, it really does. I love it, dude. You know what I've really been using lately? I've been having issues with my wrist again for some reason. So I've been using the Freeze pain relieving gel with menthol. At first, I thought it was menthol cigarettes. It brought me back to my days growing up in the hood. But no, I reached for it. I was like, you know what? This is actually going to help me. It's not going to hurt me. Once again, here's the deal. We're going to give you, as we always do to the Believe always. In Me, the most hardcore, the best, most positive fan base in podcasting. It doesn't exist. It's crazy that we have so many positive fans. I don't even believe it. We're going to give you another incredible discount because right now, if you go to CBDMD.com, five letters, pretty easy, CBDMD.com, all you got to do is use that promo code BYM, three letters, BYM at checkout. You're going to save 20% off your entire order. CBD prices can add up. If you've been buying CBD regularly, you know it can get a little bit pricey. If you're using it regularly, you want to save money. This is a great way to do it. But at the same time as supporting the show, use that promo code BYM at CBDMD.com and save 20% off anything you purchase. All right, let's get back into it.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be at the Mount Rushmore of MMA, but he's certainly currently, right now, pound for pound, one of, if not the best.
Guys, take a moment right now. If you love the show, go to our iTunes, leave us a 5-star ranking, positive review. We love the great reviews, love the positive feedback. Go subscribe to our YouTube channel. Just search Believe in Me Podcast or Michael Bisping Podcast on YouTube. And you can get the entire on-demand library, the entire history of the Believe in Me Podcast at GasDigitalNetwork.com. That is our network. We have the whole library at your fingertips, uncensored and ad-free. Use the promo code BYM30. We're giving away a 30-day free trial right now for Gas Digital, and you get access to this show and all my other podcasts as well. Mr. Bisping, you're back. Uh-huh. Let's talk about main event. Event time.
Oh, my word. I mean, where do you start? What a fight. What a fight. First of all, hats off to both of those guys. I mean, that was a fucking high-level fight. Action-packed from start to finish. Certainly delivered. With the UFC being away for so long, to come back with a fight like that. I mean, that is one, you know, that'll go down in the ages, in the record books, whatever you want to say, because it was just incredible. We'll start with, well, I don't know. I mean, I just feel bad for Tony Ferguson. You know, I mean, congratulations to Justin Gaethje. He was incredible. He was on point. The boxing was fucking phenomenal. I mean, Trevor Whitman, that's his coach. He's done an amazing job. The head movement, the slips, and then the counters were just pitch perfect. I mean, that is how you do it. He would slip a jab, come back with a left hook, the right hand over the top. It was just nice. It was fucking beautiful. It was a thing of beauty. It really was. Tony Ferguson, as we know, been undefeated for years on a 12-fight win streak. He was the interim champion. He was destined to fight for the belt. He had a good chance of being the undisputed champion. Khabib can't make it. He takes on Justin Gaethje. Doesn't fucking blink at the challenger, the change of opponent. Takes the fight, which again, he's going to be commended so highly for. And he's just outgunned. He's outgunned in a big way because some of those shots, the impact of those punches that Tony was taking. I want to say, pound for pound, the best chin in mixed martial arts. Because that motherfucker, Tony Ferguson, I mean, he calls himself El Cucuy, the Spanish or Mexican bogeyman. But fuck me, he didn't stop walking forward. He did not stop taking those shots. He didn't even react. And every time I would hear the fucking impact, and maybe because there was no crowd, it sounded louder, but I don't think that's what it was. Gaethje hits hard. We've seen when Gaethje connects like that against Edson Barboza, against Donald Cerrone, against James Vick, they fall. That's it. It's over. And every one of Justin Gaethje's wins still after Saturday night are all by knockout, TKO or KO. But the fact that Tony was taking so many, I mean, the man just has the fucking heart of a lion. And I feel that he has it. He has the respect of the entire MMA community. The way he handled himself to take the fight, the change of opponent, and to fight the way he did, and to keep taking those fucking shots, that commands respect.
Yeah. And I mean, look, it's funny because the story, I don't know what the story of the fight is, like how tough Tony is and how much he took or how disciplined Justin Gaethje was, because they were both just incredible in their own right. I mean, obviously you got to feel bad for Tony Ferguson. I thought Tony Ferguson was going to win that fight, but it's so funny as the hours count down to fight time, you start to really think about it. And for some reason, I don't know why, everything becomes more clear as I'm leading into the fight. And I was just questioning this decision. I started going like, wait a minute.
Well, no, it's because you got $250 on the line. Yes. Oh shit, did I make the right pick here? Because it's 250, but it's 850 if you've made the right one. So, yes. You know, you're not concerned about the well-being of Tony Ferguson. You're not concerned about any of that. You're like, fuck, did I make the right bet? Because Michael's pretty good at these prediction things and he went the other way.
It was an incredible performance. I got to say, Justin Gaethje, you know, look, he's the owner of 9 performance of the night bonuses in 7 fights, which is crazy. That means there's 2 fights that he got 2 bonuses for, which is fucking unheard of. He's one of the most exciting fighters in the world. He can knock people out and he throws with reckless abandon. And he, if you hear that term reckless abandon, he's the one guy you go, yes, that's reckless abandon. He doesn't give a fuck. In fact, leading into this fight, he said, I would rather lose a knockout than win a decision, which is crazy. And I don't know if that was mind games and that wasn't real. And he was trying to maybe outsmart Tony and get him thinking differently. But he was very disciplined in this fight, much more so. In fact, between the first and second round, this is a cool little benefit of sort of doing the UFC fights the way they're doing it. You heard Trevor Whitman tell him as soon as he sat down, he said, dude, fucking chill. Stop trying to kill him with every shot, okay? Pick your shots here. And he made that adjustment between that first and second round. He was still every shot. I don't know what the percentage was, but it looked like he hit everything that he threw. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah, no, he definitely was finding the target regularly. I just want to say, Trevor Whitman, what a fucking coach and what a corner man. They have him on a lot of the broadcasts as like a third or fourth or fifth fucking whatever number it is, corner man. And then sometimes he comes on and he'll give his opinion on the corner work that we just saw. And every time I find myself agreeing with him, he's such a knowledge, such a fantastic coach. And he showed that Saturday night, you know, as you said, that point there, there was another time he was just like, fucking beautiful, buddy. This is amazing. It's great work. Smiling, saying you're enjoying yourself, and Justin smiling. That's what you want to see. You want to see that energy. Often you see corner men, and they because they know The corner man or corner men sometimes, I'm not saying this for all corner men, there's some tremendous ones, Jason Perillo, Trevor Whitman, fucking the list goes on. But a lot of them, they think, ooh, this is my time to shine. This is where I get to be on TV and I get to speak. And, you, and some of them, I experienced this early in my day, you know, they're arguing over who's going to be the mic'd up referee, cornerman. You know what I mean? Because they want their voice to be the one on TV. So then when it comes down to it, they say, okay, so what you going to do here? You're going to blah, 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 blah. When he throws that jab, you take two steps to the left. You're going to more head movement, this and that. And I want to see a right hand and a left uppercut. I want a 2-3-4 with a double leg. The fucking guy is sitting there. He's just been cracked around the head of a few times, okay? He thinks the referee's fucking smoking and drinking. He doesn't know what's fucking going on. He's not following your instructions like that. Calm him down, slow down the breathing, get him to have his faculties about him, and then maybe give him a little bit of simplistic advice like, get your shit together. You're getting caught with that right hand, you got to get that left up. Don't go too intense, you know. But anyway, Trevor Whitman finds the absolute perfect balance. He's tremendous. And
yeah, there's almost like a moment of like, oh shit, here's my moment. Cameras are coming. Here we let me perform.
That's what yeah. I'm talking about. Some of them do yeah. that. Do you know what I mean? And it's not about that. And a good coach knows that. A good cornerman knows that. But unfortunately, I experienced this in my time. Some of them aren't there for you. They're there for themselves. And I've seen that across the board as well with other fighters. You know what I mean? They want to be seen as the man in the corner. They want to be seen on TV. That's how they get their clout from it. You know what I mean? So, which is sad. It's a shame. But yeah, I mean, what do you say about Tony Ferguson? I mean, Jesus Christ. I feel sorry for the guy. I do. I feel so legit because he deserves that big title fight. I don't know when he got paid on Saturday night. No doubt he got paid handsomely, but that fight against Khabib, if he could have got some pay-per-view points on that, it would have been life-changing money. You know, and he deserves that for the amount of sacrifices, the fights and the performances that he's put on. And not only that, you know, the way he wins fights, the way he carries himself as well. He's a very unique individual, and he's a credit to the UFC. He's a credit to this sport. And as I say, the better man won on the night. It's as simple as that. In fact, let's talk about the stoppage, because I was watching those fights, those punches, the way they were connected. And then halfway through round three and halfway through round four, I was thinking, I was starting to get concerned for Tony. You know, I was starting to think, wow, this is now becoming difficult to watch. You know what I mean? Because you can't continue to take punches of that kind of impact for that amount of time and then go off and live a normal life. Do you know what I mean? There is going to be a consequence at some point. Now we know the consequence is a fractured orbital bone and lots of cuts and bruising and things like that. And Tony's going to be absolutely fine. He went to the doctor. And of course, we saw footage of him at the doctor. He's dancing around the place in true Tony Ferguson style. Yeah, not feeling sorry for himself. It is what it is. Lost the fight. Fuck it. Let's have a little dance off. Yeah. So that's great as well. But as I say, I was starting to get concerned. And then there was that one punch. It was the jab. Gagey throws the jab. And then it kind of wobbled Ferguson. And then he started, he started acting strange. Started acting a little weird.
It was
started
bizarre, yeah.
Started acting like everything wasn't firing correctly. You know, he was still standing. He was still conscious, but he was on the feet. But everything wasn't firing correctly. The nerves weren't responding to how they should have been. He was like, well, it's like it looked like his brain was having a malfunction. He was trying to shake it back together. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then the referee, fucking God bless that ref. He did the right. Was it Herb Dean? It's
Herb Dean, yeah.
Yeah, Herb, that was a great stoppage because he could have allowed Tony to take a few more shots, you know, because he was still on the feet. And he was still standing and they weren't even engaging. He was just like kind of shaking his head. But fucking well done, Herb. I thanked him. I was like, fucking good job, Herb. That was great.
I thought it was a great job as well. So, some people were, I mean, very few people, but I heard a couple of people saying, oh, that was also early. He was standing. Nah. He was, let me tell you something, dude, he would look really hurt. And to be honest with you, at that point, like he's just taking damage. At that point, he's just getting hit. And it's not like he's just getting hit by the average lightweight. He's getting hit by Justin Gaethje, who on the fifth round was still whipping in crazy shots, crazy powerful shots, and to have him take any more damage, there was no, it wasn't like it was like, oh, he could still come back and land that big shot at the end. It just wasn't happening. He had nothing left in the gas tank. He could barely stand anymore. And it's, once again, it's not, you know, I think that Tony Ferguson that showed up last night could still beat 99% of the lightweights in the world. It was just, even maybe, not for nothing, maybe even beat Justin Gaethje a year ago. The way we saw Justin Gaethje fight, I have no idea.
Well,
I think the story.
Let's remember, he made weight 2 weeks ago. there's a possibility that that played a factor in his performance. I'm telling you, you've only got so many weight cuts in you. Those kind of drastic weight cuts, there's only so many of them you can do. And they definitely take a toll on your body. I'm not a doctor, but that's just my opinion, having done it myself for fucking many years, right? And he did that 2 weeks ago, okay? I don't know how much, but I feel it reduced his effectiveness.
Both work. They both work.
Effectivity. I don't think that's a word, though.
Effectivity.
Effectiveness. I think it reduced his effectiveness. Okay. And then therefore, but listen, not taking anything away from Justin Gaethje, of course, as I say, I was swinging off his nuts. It was incredible. I'm just saying, I'm not sure if that was the smartest thing for Tony to do. Hey, but listen, right. Now we've got Justin versus Khabib.
Mm-hmm. And Khabib came out as a massive favorite over Gaethje as well. With like,
oh, did he? I haven't seen that.
It's not a real line.
Yeah.
Because the fight's not obviously made yet. But it was a pretty massive favorite over Justin, which is kind of funny considering how good Justin Gaethje looked. Now, it was very funny. This fight was a coming out party for Justin Gaethje as well, because it's like, holy shit, it's a real debate. It's a real debate. There's nobody that knows anything about mixed martial arts that could, with a straight face, tell you that Khabib's going to maul Justin Gaethje. That's crazy. Justin Gaethje looks like a fucking world beater. At this point, I can't connect the dots on how Khabib gets the job done against Justin Gaethje.
I was going to say, at this point, I think Justin Gaethje beats Khabib. Just purely based on styles. I really do. Or at least... it's going to be a real close fight, but I wonder, because this opens the door for a Conor McGregor versus Justin Gaethje for the interim title. It kind of does.
I predicted this.
Because Ramadan, it's not that long, but Khabib's out doing that. And, you know, Conor wants to fight again. Justin would probably take that fight. I don't know. Maybe he wouldn't. Maybe he'd say, fuck that. The only thing I'm interested in the real belt. But money talks. Money fucking talks. And a fight with Conor on pay-per-view points, you're changing your life. It is red panty night for a fight. So
yeah, Justin Gaethje wants that fucking fight. You want the Conor McGregor. Anybody in the world, I don't give a shit if you've never fought a day in your life. If you fight Conor McGregor, you are an instant star, instant millionaire. You get knocked out in 1 second. You can open up a slew of MMA gyms across the country. You have restaurants. You have autograph sessions. Fight Conor McGregor if the opportunity presents itself. Justin Gaethje, with watching the adjustment that he made, knowing that he has the ability to control the fuck, it's like a superhero, dude. Power in both hands. I mean, I think that he beats any man at 155 pounds right now.
I don't know about that. I mean, that's a ballsy statement. I mean, Khabib definitely would. I mean, he'd be the favorite. He's the champion. He's undefeated in 28 fights. Michael Johnson, in Gaethje's first ever UFC fight, was giving Gaethje all kinds of problems. Why? I think he's a southpaw. He's got a very long reach, and he fires beautiful straight shots, much like McGregor. Okay, fair enough. Gaethje won it by a knockout in the end, but it gave him a lot of problems. So who knows? But I'll tell you what is going to happen right now.
First fight in UFC also has a lot of jitters.
First fight in the UFC, a lot of jitters. Thing. You know, but come on. I'll tell you what is going to happen. I'm going to have to wrap this one up. I've got less than an hour to be ready, packed, all my stuff done. And I've got to get off to the airport. I'm going to find.
I'm having such a good time on today's show.
I've got to find a mask. I have to have a mask on and gloves at all times. I'm going to have to tear this house apart and find one. But we will be back with another show. Lewis, it's always a great time to talk to you, my friend.
We're probably going to be back this week.
Yeah, well, I'm going to bring a microphone. So, you know, let's do another show, baby boy.
I'll do another show no matter what. We'll more than likely come back with another show later in the week. Thank you for supporting, guys. We'll be back soon. Go subscribe. Do all that other good stuff.
Tell your friends about the show. If you like the show, do me a favor. I need to get off this 69,000 number. We got to do it. I can't stand it. Tell your friends to subscribe. Leave a 5-star review. Have a great day. Look after yourself. Stay safe. Thanks for watching our show. All the best. Take care.